Martin Keevany, Creative Writing. Creative Writing, Introduction by Ramon. Wiki.
Good evening, and you're all very welcome to week 8, the final week of your Creative Writing Introduction remote course. Just a note to those of you who have transferred, I really appreciate your patience and understanding of the situation and transferring from the live course, because of course I do appreciate that you signed up for a live course and you've transferred over to a remote course. So a grateful thanks for your patience and understanding in that process. So as I usually start off with by saying here, this is an audio recording of the tutorial section of the course, prepared for those of you who cannot attend the live video conference, and also of course useful to those of you who might like to hear the tutorial again. You will already have received an email containing the PowerPoint presentation package, which contains all of the slides I will be discussing over the next hour or so. So what I'd like you to do now is check your email if you haven't already done so and download the file named Week 8, which I sent you. That's the PowerPoint slides, and obviously you can pause your audio there while you do this if you like. Okay, so you should now be looking at the first slide on the presentation. This time you'll see a date and the title, The World on Screen. And that is a photo of a film crew in action on a Victorian shoot, I believe. So just to remind everyone, if you have any questions about any aspect of the course, as usual, don't hesitate to email me at info@martinkeevany.com. K-E-A-V-E-N-E-Y. And now let's go to slide 2. So as I say, well done on completing the course. And this is just going to be a tutorial on the craft of writing for the screen. I will also refer to the sample text, which is the movie The Hustler and the screenplay, which I've sent you. Okay, so moving on now to slide 3. So I'm just going to move from the stage to the screen in terms of, you know, in relation to us as writers, by giving you a very short history of the rise of this technology. It's an extraordinary technology of the screen, of screen entertainment. And even really, even though we take it for granted being able to watch this rapid succession of photographs combined with a perfectly synchronized audio track and be drawn into a world in the same way as in a book or a live performance, it is actually quite extraordinary. Even over a century since the technology was introduced, it is still quite amazing. So where did it come from? And I think it's useful, I think, to appreciate the rise of film and television and other visual media to help us learn the basics of writing for the screen. Of course, I'm not a film historian, but I'll give you a fairly general introduction, starting with the rise of technology, early films, montage, the battle of TV and the cinema, the rise of internet, and more modern screen entertainments. So if we move on now to slide 4, and the man here you're looking at is Edward Muybridge, and no, I haven't spelled it wrong. He actually changed it, changed the more conventional spelling to this more ancient version himself by deed poll. He was a very interesting character. He was a photographer, born in the 1830s in England, and from one perspective might say he is the father or even the god of screen entertainment, even though I doubt he is very well known in the world today. This is the reason that he could be said to be the father or even the god of screen entertainment is because of a meeting he had with Leland Stanford. Yes, Leland Stanford, who founded Stanford University, who had become extremely wealthy from railway construction in the 19th century. Stanford wanted to win a bet with someone that at some point in a horse's gallop, all four hooves were in the air. So he commissioned Muybridge to prove the point. And either Muybridge or Stanford, or both together, came up with the idea of lining a succession of cameras and having them all photograph the horse as it passed by. By comparing the photographs, Stanford believed he would prove that in one of them, all four hooves were off the ground. So in the true spirit of film conflict, the experiment failed due to problems with Muybridge's shutter speeds. He returned 6 years later in 1878 and completed the experiment. This is all available on the internet, all this information. He returned 6 years later in 1878 and completed the experiment, proving that at one point all four hooves were off the air. As they examined the photos, they noticed following the photos, like if you just watch, scan your eyes, or pan your eyes across the photographs, they noticed that this was created an illusion that the horse was running. And this is one of the theories of the invention of what was called the motion picture. I'm not saying this is exactly how it was invented, but it does give an indication of how the technology was practically arrived at. So I hope that's at least interesting and gives you an idea. After the motion picture was born, it was still a very slow process before films as we know them today were remotely recognizable. For many years, the technology was so astounding. Audiences were content to watch a short reel in a traditional theatre, like where you would watch a which simply showed people entering or leaving a factory for work, and there'd be somebody to the side playing the piano, perhaps. In the early 1900s, narrative films began to appear with more distinct storylines. This was enabled by, in no small way, by the development of the montage, which was a technique practiced by directors, Russian directors such as Sergei Eisenstein, where scenes were cut on the reel and joined elsewhere, so that way you could jump from one scene to the next. This, of course, had fundamental implications for the script writing process on a screen, in contrast to a stage. On a stage, for example, you write a play that normally runs continuously for the whole scene in the one area. In scene screenwriting, it is simple to instantly jump from one room to another building, another town, or another country. Of course, in a play, you could expect the audience to follow you thematically by making some change to the scene. But in general terms, you're in the one scene. You're in one area in the play, or in the scene of the play. Whereas with the screen, you could, with a film, with a movie or a television program, you can skip onto somewhere else very quick. So this obviously had fundamental implications for the script writing process. So this is one of the major new possibilities that screen technology brought to bear on visual entertainment. Yes, there was other films which could be often accessed in as something like a small slot machine for a nickel in America, which were called Nickelodeons. Hence the term Nickelodeon. And the silent movie business then exploded over the next 30 years. But this was still 20 years after Muybridge's experiment, so it was extremely slow. And in 1929, you have talkies emerging. And it all seems that it happened very quick from our perspective in 2020. But if you look back then, that was a very long time. 1929, you're talking about 50 years. Over 50 years after that technology was first kind of seen, recognized, according to the Stanford version of events anyway. So films in 1929 and onwards could then be watched with the synchronized audio track, which was another remarkable advance. And of course, this audio, and as you know, audio is a key part of visual media, of the visual medium of electronic media on screens. So this audio, of course, can similarly be cut, and even more exciting, it can be removed and replaced or even enhanced with other effects. So the creative process then of modern filmmaking began, and, you know, with the exception of picture and sound quality, it hasn't really changed all that much since then. So there were some extraordinary movies made in the 1930s, 40s and 50s. For example, It Happened One Night. Casablanca, Citizen Kane, and many others, The Wizard of Oz. In the 1950s, and of course, a lot of these films based on books as well, you know, the films that were adapted from novels.
was a popular a popular source novels were a popular source of screenplays in the 1950s. I don't really cover adaptation here, but it is another possibility, of course, for a screenwriter. You have to be sure you have the rights. But I come into that's a lot more discussion involved there. Television became a commodity in the 1950s. Was available to many Americans, of course, and TV shows such as I Love Lucy, Roy Rogers are just examples of the mainstream shows which gained great popularity. These, of course, a lot of these shows, TV shows, traced the formula of the radio in the same way as film had used theatre as a template. By the late 1960s, cinema, which had become a dominant entertainment for a generation, was now under serious threat from the television. You know, people were becoming couch potatoes, I suppose, this term, preferring to just sit with the television and their dinner on the couch than bother to get up and go to a cinema. But in 1968, according to the film historian Peter Biscino, two films were released which had a profound effect on the film industry, which had been significantly anchored in Hollywood, Los Angeles, since the 1900s. These films were Easy Rider and Bonnie and Clyde, and they were met with very little studio control for a variety of reasons. Somehow, directors Warren Beatty and Dennis Hopper had succeeded in getting these projects funded, and they were enormous commercial successes. Afterwards, according to Biscino, Hollywood film producers stepped back generally and allowed these artists free range, which led to a lot of masterpieces which had the directors had huge artistic control, such as The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, I'd even say Superman, and The Deer Hunter. There was, however, a wildly ambitious film called Heaven's Gate in 1980 by Michael Cimino. He was very ambitious director at that time, but it was such a fun, and he directed The Deer Hunter, which was incredibly successful, and he got over $40 million to make Heaven's Gate in 1980, but it was such a financial disaster that Biscino argues that Hollywood took back control, and this created the rigid formula movies of commercial successes, of the rigid formula which movies of commercial success often follow very closely to. Even a film with many formulaic elements, like Back to the Future, was years in development due to its endure its originality, which was, of course, turned out to be very enduring. That was quite risky with large volume audiences, because artful projects might be massively successful, but are more likely to be commercial failures. They were often shelved in favor of much more genetic assembly line type films, which were cliched but guaranteed to find an audience seeking an evening of simple entertainment. So, in other words, they were more keen on films which did exactly what they said on the tin. In other words, they just kind of ticked all the boxes. They weren't particularly ambitious, but they were guaranteed to get a stable audience. Whereas these films, like 1970s films, were a bit out there, were a bit risky, and could be hugely successful, but possibly could also be like Heaven's Gate, where there would be millions and millions lost. So we kind of apparently had a kind of 1980s onward, a kind of much more reserved film productions, and you still see it today, where a lot of films made are very kind of. I mean, there's a huge amount of sequels, and there has been for a long time now, sequels and films that are just based on old characters, because those characters are already established, and obviously adaptations of books and other projects by already very, very successful people. You won't see too many artistic films on a grand scale by newcomers like you would have in those times, unfortunately. Since then, of course, since the 80s, television has moved from being quite episodic,
like the Columbo series, where Detective Columbo simply solves a different case every week, to the more long-form style of a series such as The Sopranos, where episodes are enriched also with a very long-running narrative, a long-running storyline, where characters and relationships often fundamentally change. Not so much in The Sopranos, because a lot of their characters stay in the same position, whereas more recently, like TV series such as Game of Thrones, characters kind of swing from one area of the world or one kind of position in society to another throughout the course of the series. So back in the 80s and 70s, TV was often episodic, and after these shows like The Sopranos and The Wire, TV became more cinematic and more graphic in nature. So the cinema would have been the place you'd go to see blood and guts in the 80s and 70s and the early 90s, and the TV was where you watched something a bit less cutting. But that kind of changed, and has changed since the early 2000s. I have to say, though, that there is a lot of questionable views on this, on the television as having a golden age now. When you look at television in the 80s, people, a lot of the TV series were very ambitious and very kind of had very kind of intricate themes. It's just that people were only watching them once a week, and they had to see them at a certain time, and they were very much broken up with ads. And of course, many people would never see the pilot episode. Whereas nowadays, Netflix has enabled binge watching, where viewers can sit for hours and hours and watch entire seasons and entire series, actually, if you want it, all in one go, or in over a very short space of time. And of course, you can also rewind and pause and skip ahead, things like that that you couldn't do in the 80s. In the past 15 years also, of course, YouTube has become probably the leader of internet-based content, with further repercussions for scriptwriters, because short form has become very effective, especially in advertising. And of course, it was always successful in music videos, scripts being used by musicians in their music videos since the 60s to promote their work. As a writing for the screen, then, is incredibly rewarding, and there is remarkable creative scope for the writer to move around scenes and locations with ease, utilizing the sound if they wish. So there you have a brief introduction to the world of writing on screen. Do check back on everything I've said elsewhere. Make up your mind. I'm not a film historian, as I say. It's just good to have a general background, I think. If nothing else, it does help us appreciate the value and art of writing on the screen and what we're trying to achieve writing for the screen. Okay, so let's now move on to slide 5, to the actual process of writing a screenplay or a script. Screenplay and script are the same thing, at least in this course. I'll try to use script as much as possible. So what is the process of script writing? Okay, so there are two potential extremes, like in prose and novel writing, and lots of variations in between. I think I've kind of touched on this earlier in the course. On the one hand, and this is often advised by screenwriters, you start a project with a sentence like, what is this project about? Typically, what is this project about? It is usually about something or somebody that wants to do something or wants somebody. Motivation is generally seen as the key in script writing, because what we are watching is in the media. In this medium, we are watching the medium rather than reading the medium. So we judge the moving picture of the character as their motivation. Like when we are watching characters move around, we are learning about what they want. What is it the character wants? What is it that stops the character getting what they want? If you remember what I said earlier about Muybridge and Stanford's little experiment, the shutter speed stopped Muybridge getting the shoot done. This problem was ironically a classic cinematic device. The writer invents something, and also was a classic theatrical device as well. The writer invents something to stop the character getting what it is they want. So what happened there was the shutter speed stopped Muybridge and Stanford completing their experiment.
So all that is required then is a resolution, an ending. Does the character get what they want? Obviously, this is a very distilled or reductive version of a script. There are many other elements layered on top, but this is typically the fundamental structure of any piece of TV, film, or advertising, whatever, no matter what way the viewer interprets it. Now, if you're doing your project strictly by outline, you'll then rewrite this one sentence, expanding it all the time, like you were kneading dough, perhaps, adding in more and more sentences. How does the character not get what they want? When? Who gives it to them? Who stops them and how? Why do they want this thing? When did they start wanting it? Did they always want it? Who else wants this thing? Who has control over the thing? So you keep answering these questions as you keep writing your outlines, extending them all the time. You keep getting this, keep writing this until you get it to a stage of describing each and every scene in the project. A feature film normally has 24 scenes. So the outline, which will be called a treatment at this point, is often 10 to 15 pages long for a feature film, or 4,000 words. When you have the treatment complete, you write a synopsis, which is usually about 500 words, and paraphrases all the major twists and turns of the project. If it's a film or TV series, yes, the approach will vary a little here. But the important thing to note is every beat, meaning every twist and turn of the story, is written out first. So not a line of script has been written yet until you have all this treatment and synopsis complete. And then using this method, you write out the script using the treatment as a guide. But it is vital to note that the treatment is not concrete. You do not feel that you cannot change things as you write your screenplay, or in other words, you can change things as you write the screenplay. You can change things around from the treatment. Actually, it is highly unlikely you will not need to change many, many items. The treatment and synopsis are just guides, and they will look ridiculous later on in the process, the original ones. You will keep changing them as you keep writing. Once you have the script formed from the treatment, I would then start to rewrite the script. Now, some writers prefer to keep alternating their treatment. I actually prefer to hear the dialogue of the characters and keep working on the script, and then revising the synopsis and treatment at the end. Once I get the script written, I kind of keep rewriting the script, and I will come back to the synopsis at the end and fix it up, change around. Obviously, the script things will have changed in the script that are not correlating with the treatment or the script or the synopsis. So it's just important to remember that the synopsis and the treatment are just kind of like blueprints that can be revised as you are going on. They're only kind of guidelines. They're not concrete. Now, you might prefer to go another way, the writing approach. In this approach, you do not write out a sentence, a synopsis, or a treatment. You simply just jump into the first scene. If you want, write fade in and blindly go with your characters, play out each scene. It is certainly a much more artful way of doing it, but it is also much more risky, as you could lose control of the material, which means that your character becomes lost. That means that, like, there's no point to a lot of scenes, and you've gone through a lot of energy into the project, which might be worn out now, and you might just kind of lose the gumption to keep going with it, because it just becomes tired. The idea becomes tired. It's not what you thought it would be, and it's not going anywhere, and you don't have any kind of, you don't know where you're going. So, I mean, that is the problem. That's the risk. On the other hand, you might well create some devastatingly original scenes over the course of a morning writing in this way, which would be extremely difficult when constricted to, I have to follow these beats in this outline approach. Yes, my method is a bit of a mixture. I would lean slightly more towards the outline, but I would still allow free dialogue writing. And in my opinion, it's better to have some kind of outline, but also to have a lot of flexibility in terms of how you get to that outline into a script. Practice will inform you the best way which suits your sensitivity. And regardless of which method you use, remember that the key in script writing, as it has evolved since Muybridge's time, is to tell your story in the shortest possible way. This is particularly important when starting out as a scriptwriter. You might like to experiment with long drawn-out scenes like Michael Cimino, remember from Heaven's Gate movie, later on, but as a beginner, it is essential you learn how to communicate story points, or beats, as I call them, in as efficient a way as possible. And even later in your career, you might continue this technique as your viewers still appreciate its effectiveness. For example, story moves faster on screen than on the page. Audience, I mean, instantly take in the whole setup, the background, the characters, a lot quicker than they would with story elements than they would on a page. That's why story elements of each scene unfold quicker. This means using the three-act structure, which I'll get to in a moment. But an easy reference is get in late to a scene and get out early. Don't be around when you're finalising your script for the opening remarks of any scene, and get out, exit before the action dialogue lose power. That is effective screenwriting. And if you doubt me, take a look at any film or television programme. So try cutting the start and the end of each scene and see what happens. Often you can nearly imagine when you watch TV or film programmes, or film or TV programs, you can often imagine that they were things that happened before and after the scene, but we didn't need to see them. The script writer cut them out because they were simply just boring the audience. It doesn't mean you wouldn't write them, because you might say it might be easier not to write them. No, you need to write them because you need to set yourself up psychologically when you're writing out the sketching out the scene. You need to write the whole scene and not be worried about cutting at that point. I'm talking about once you have your script in place, that's when you start cutting. The beginning, the tops and tails, shall we say, like a carrot of each scene. Sometimes you won't need to do that, but sometimes you do. For example, if we return to my old example of the bank robber. If you remember, the plot was he gets up in the morning, goes to the bank, robs it and runs away. So what if we start the scene in the bank? What if we cut it just as he grabs the money? How much more dramatic is that kind of a scene? Rather than him getting up in the morning, walking along to the bank, going in, taking the money, and then out of the bank, running away. What if we just start the scene with him in the bank, going to the cashier, grabbing the money, and then cut? There was a program called Oz in the 90s, OZ, which really took this cutting to an extreme. And you could be watching an episode, and like so many things would happen in the whole episode. It was incredible, really, really, really fast. It was some kind of unbelievably compressed type of storytelling where a huge amount of elements happened all at once in a very short space of time, which was in complete contrast to a lot of TV programs that had gone before that would have very slow burning kind of long, slow developed. Incidents. Of course, this was in a prison where things do happen quite fast, even though there's a lot of non-activity, and it suited the project quite well. The other thing to note about screenwriting is that it is a visual medium. Yes, of course, we know that it's a visual medium, but I still would emphasize it. What's wrong with this following line of script? There is a man running down the street. Yes, there's not a lot of things wrong with it. It's in the present tense, it's simple and clear, but it is not good screenwriting. Why? Well, note the verb, running. You cannot photograph a person running, despite Muybridge's best efforts at photographing a horse running in the 1870s. All you can do, as Muybridge did, is take a succession of photos of a horse as it runs. All we are watching are gallops. All we are watching on screen is a series of still photographs that are precisely sequential. But even so, even though they're sequential, you do not use progressive verbs. The correct way to write the same line of "there is a man running down the street" is "there is a man that runs down the street."
That line could be demonstrated in as a still image. It wouldn't be, but it could. That not might be a deal breaker in your script, but writing photographically demonstrates your professional level of writing. Okay, now let's return to the structure of screenwriting. This is not such as big a thing in prose. You might not need it so closely adhere to a three-act structure. But having said that, it certainly won't do any harm to many works of fiction to keep it in mind. So what is a three-act structure? Well, it simply represents the poetic storytelling or poetics of storytelling noted by the ancient philosopher Aristotle, and which means basically to generate interest, maintain interest, and satisfy interest. That's the first part of any story-like piece that gets you on board, as it were, gets you hooked, gets you to care what is going to happen next. The second part keeps you engaged sufficiently that you will wait until the final part, which satisfies your investment of time in the first two parts. And you might guess that parts are usually referred to as acts. And if you break any scene of story into quarters, take the first quarter as the first act, the last quarter as the third act, and the part in the middle is the second act. So I know that's quite convoluted. So if you just take a film and you cut it into four equal pieces, the first piece is the first act and the last piece is the last act. So the middle two pieces are the second act. This is applicable to films, TV dramas and many other types of visual motion art, including the theatre, where it was first used, of course. You can also, of course, use this in each act. In other words, each act has three acts. And each scene and each act should also be easy enough to break into three acts. So like, if you want to emulate Michael Cimino again, who ignored all this in Heaven's Gate later, you certainly can. But to begin, learn these rules as a scriptwriter. And if you're wise, you may try to always use them. Anyway, this is a natural way. For example, how do you buy something in a shop? Act 1, you need a new Hoover. Act 2, you got the shop. You go to the shop, you ask about their selection of Hoovers, they don't have the one you want. You go to three more shops, none of them have the one you want. You become frantic, obsessed with getting your carpets clean. And then Act 3, you get home, you find the old Hoover just needed a new bag. Dough. Oh, now, if you want, you can think also of breaking. So in other words, we had the opening act of you wanted a new Hoover, with the second act of when you were engaged the audience by going around looking for a Hoover, and the third act you came home to find that all you needed was a new bag rather than a new Hoover. So there was a twist at the end of the story, as it were. Now you can also think of breaking up the first act where you needed a new Hoover into three little scenes. You try, scene one would be you try to Hoover the house, the Hoover stops working. Scene 2, you try various electrical experiments to get the Hoover to work. And scene 3, you have a breakdown about the imminent return of your partner to find your carpets have not been hoovered. So that's breaking the act down into three scenes. And further again, you can break your scene down into three sections. So scene 1's the first section. The scene would be about it's spring cleaning day. You pull the curtains, start polishing tables, cleaning windows. Now for the hoovering, part 2 narrates that the Hoover looks a bit jaded. And in part 3, you get it all set up, turn it on, and the Hoover's not working. Yes, these examples, of course, speak to the outline approach to script writing. Now, if you prefer to do the writing approach, well, you'd probably throw in some dialogue into the scene. So we'd start off, let's say, scene 1. And the heading, as I will talk about in the formatting in a moment. Mary sits at a coffee table on the phone. Dialogue from Mary. Hey, Jane, I'm thinking today is a day for spring cleaning. Then Jane, you know, I've just paid my cleaner for the month. Todd doesn't like me to put my weekly manicure at risk. Mary, I see. So you can't see it here, but if I had a slide, we'd be looking at this dialogue. But you can see that I've just written out some dialogue there for that particular scene, which kind of indicates that Mary is thinking that today is spring cleaner. It's not a work of art, but it gives you an idea. You can choose to continue on writing the script with dialogue or an action, or you could write out what happens in every scene, or you could do both, which is what I do. When you swap methods, when you choose to swap methods, it's something that comes with practice. I suggest starting with outline and see if you need to hear the character speak. If you do, then you write out some dialogue. Now on slide 6 there we have some slight sample of dialogue. So int means internal. Also in this line, is which is known as a slug line, you have the location. Don't ask me why it's called a slug line, which is not a very attractive name, but that's what it's called. You have the location of the scene, which is a kitchen, and the time, which is usually either day or night. In the bank robber story, an actual time like 10 a.m. would be useful in that particular type of a story. I don't usually give a lot of information on characters, and I don't give a lot of information here. You like a play where you have a page to cite their names, ages, and preferred wardrobe. In a screenplay, you just simply supply a plain cover page with the actual script. Everything must be relayed through dialogue and action. This convention probably arose because there isn't a program that you can buy for movies like there is when you go to the theatre. Nevertheless, you should capitalise character names when you first introduce them, usually their full title, such as John Smith, and their primary role in the piece, such as bank manager John Smith. You should also include their general name and age, unless a child where you provide their exact age, for example, bank manager John Smith, comma, or schoolboy in capital, schoolboy capital, Timothy Smith, comma, 11. Character names go in the center in scripts with the dialogue underneath. This can be made easier with a program called CELTX, as I advised last year, which is free, and you can use it to position everything like this very quickly. Remember that characters can only be defined through the dialogue and action, unless it's a voiceover or monologue based script, which is usually to be avoided for beginners. Dialogue and action are the vehicles through which you tell your story. So in the same way as you tell your scenes fast, also try to say as little as possible in your non-dialogue lines. So for example, instead of "The couple sit on a golden garden bench with a figure of eight design and wooden armrests. The park has eucalyptus trees, flower beds of daisies, and lush green grass." You'd write, "The couple sit in a picturesque park." So you keep description minimal and do the same with dialogue. Soliloquies are Shakespearean, so modern stories require modern dialogue. Again, if you want to impersonate Cimino later, you can ignore this, but for now, learn this rule. Some writers argue you should project a film into the mind of the reader by embellishing everything, like in the first example there. And I have read, award-winning scripts which use description like this, but effectively integrated into the action. It's possible to do so, but you do need to be writing for quite a while. And as a beginner, I would suggest playing safe. Now, slide 7 there, the submissions process. Yeah, unfortunately, in my opinion, screenwriting is probably the most problematic or challenging of these areas for a writer in terms of submissions. More people want to write for the screen than any other type of writing because of the promise of huge payments, fame, immortalization in cinematic classics, the romance of Hollywood, and etc. So you just look at the sheer number of films being made. You multiply that by the infinite thousands, and you get an idea of the number of proposals which are floating around. Now, how do you get beyond that? And if you want to be a scriptwriter, it won't bother you. You continue on anyway. It's not easy. Feedback is not as available in this area than in the theatre and prose writing. Having said that, grant applications, particularly in this country, do offer feedback. I've already spoken this course about screenwriting sharing sites where you can get feedback in return for feedback yourself.
Some options. I would suggest you write a short film and try and get it produced. An award-winning short is a great start for any script writer. I would liaise with production companies where possible, at film festivals, for example. Look up your local arts organisation. As I said, Screen Ireland here in Ireland has a list of industry directors, producers, writers. Get in touch with all of them and try to get them to look at your work. Most of them will be quite approachable. You can look for an agent, but it's very difficult as they will mostly work on referrals. Collaboration, of course, co-writing is another avenue, which I can't get into tonight because too long of a discussion. But do get to know the actors and directors and try to get your project independently made if you can arrange other funding. Okay, so that's the end now of the tutorial part of the class. Just ask you what you thought of The Hustler. If you'd like to compare the script with the film to get a sense of how script writing works. I mean, it's just an example of screenwriting that's based actually on a novel, The Hustler itself, and isn't, I suppose, particularly, it certainly isn't, I wouldn't call it formulaic in any way, but you can compare the script with the film to get a sense of how script writing works. If you want a script, a film that seems to follow the formula very well, and it was also a very, very successful film. Think of the Karate Kid, the 1980s version of the Karate Kid is often cited as a perfect example of a screenplay and a film that follows the formula, but is also very, very kind of engaging as well. So it does the formula in the best possible way, in other words. Useful exercise is to watch scenes of films and write out that scene as a script yourself. Like any aspect of writing, practice is the key. Okay, thank you very much in conclusion for attending the course. If you haven't already filled out the feedback form, please do so. This will help greatly with improvement and provision of future courses. If you have submitted a final project, I will be in touch within 3 months, and any final revisions must be with me 2 weeks after the end of the course. Do check out my consultancy page for further services and watch for future courses on my website. I very much appreciate you doing the course with me. It was a pleasure to meet you all. Do keep writing and keep reading. Maintain links with your class, which will hopefully now become part of your writing group. Do publish your work and let me know of any launches or readings. The last thing I'll say is advice I give myself, which is keep going. Best of luck.
Produced with Audacity and Martin Kevany Creative Writing. Music track Dortmund by Alexander Nakarada, SerpentSoundStudios.com. Please note this recording is for your personal use and should not be shared or published in any way. Martin Kevany Creative Writing 2020.